This is Lake Effect from 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee's NPR. Thanks for joining us. I'm Mitch Tyke.
And I'm Joy Powers. Even on the coldest and gloomiest of days in a city like Milwaukee, we can open up a window on an exotic universe with a computer or smartphone. The internet has brought far-flung places and people closer to us. And one of the go-to resources to find places to go to is the website and social media feed Atlas Obscura.
The site connects travelers and would-be travelers with each other and with unique tourist attractions in all corners of the globe, 15,000 at last count. Atlas Obscura expanded to include a real atlas last year, and this month the Atlas Obscura Empire expanded again to include a book sharing unique places with a younger audience. And it all started here in the Midwest for co-founder Dylan Thuris. He was in Milwaukee recently and joined us on site at the Greenfield Public Library. Thanks for taking a few minutes to chat.
I'm happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
So how and when were the seeds of adventure planted in you?
Yeah, so I credit these Midwestern road trips that I went on with my parents. So I grew up in Minneapolis, and you know, I didn't travel anywhere exotic as a kid at all. I think I made it to Canada by the time I was 13, you know? But my parents did take me on these very quintessential Midwestern trips where we would, you know, it was like 6 hours between locations. And we went to South Dakota and saw Wall Drug and the Corn Palace, and we went to North Dakota and saw relatives. And we went to Wisconsin. And I went to a place when I was about 12 that is still one of my favorite places in the world. It is in Spring Green, Wisconsin, and it is the House on the Rock. Well known, I think, to Wisconsinites, but I still credit it as one of America's weirdest places. It is truly amazing. And it's funny because it's a place that either at some point you are screaming for an exit, you're like, get me out of here. I was just talking to someone today who had that exact reaction to it. Or you're like, this is a wonderland, I can't believe how incredible it is. For me, it was like, this is a wonderland. And for those who've never been there, it's got the world's largest carousel inside of it. It's got a giant hallway that looks like it goes on forever and is kind of cantilevered out over the forest. It's got a squid fighting a whale the size of the Statue of Liberty inside of this house. It takes 6 hours to walk through. Anyway, so that sort of got that going in my mind. And then there were sort of a few other things along the way. I mean, I liked books about this kind of stuff. I think most kids do enjoy books about, you know, ancient cults and hidden wonders. I would look at those Time Life books called Mysteries of the Unknown. Yeah. They had those ads that said, read the book, which those were, you know, they're full of sketchy stuff, but they were still fun. And then as I got older, as I was more of a teenager, 15, 16, Minneapolis, I was a straight edger as a teenager, so I didn't drink and do drugs, but I spent a lot of time exploring abandoned buildings, and that was another way in which I sort of got acquainted with the joy of place and places having their own stories and personalities. So those all kind of, and at that point, obviously, Atlas Obscura was nothing. It's only in retrospect that I look back and I see these kinds of things, but those all sort of started some of those interests forming.
Well, right. I was reading this latest book through the filter of, you know, what I have enjoyed it when I was a kid. And I got to thinking, you know, kids collect stuff. You know, at least my kids collect stuff. I guess Your kids are probably, they maybe collect,
like,
you know,
acorn tops, right. Whatever they have in their pocket, the weird, like, magical things in a 3.5-year-old's pockets are like, where did you get this? Anyway.
But the other thing they collect is cool experiences. Mm. You know, it's like this book is really about collecting weird knowledge.
Yeah, and I think my hope is that for parents and kids together, it's a chance to just sort of go on this journey of imagination and curiosity and wonder in the world. And, you know, it's not a very practical trip planning book. You know, you're not going to go to Blood Falls in Antarctica. But each of these places, as you learn about them, hopefully it sort of expands your sense of what's possible in the world, how big our world is, how filled with sort of astonishing stuff and things still left to discover. I mean, the world's largest cave in Vietnam was discovered just a few years ago. And So this sense that there's still a lot out there and that we should approach the world with it, with that sense of kind of wonder is what I hope people come away with.
Yeah, do you think there's a certain inherent optimism in travel and writing about far-flung places?
I think there, for what we do at Atlas Obscura, there's an inherent optimism. I think that the inherent optimism is that the world is a beautiful, magical place. And sometimes the things are dark or sort of, you know, it's Skeleton Lake and they were all killed in a hailstorm and it's crazy. But it is sort of a reminder that our world is an amazing place. And I think sometimes our modern experience can feel very claustrophobic and sort of this, the world actually doesn't feel big. It feels like, oh, there's a typhoon in the Philippines and that's horrible and whatever. But it all kind of draws close. And I hope that sort of pointing out some of the stuff that people aren't familiar with pushes that out a little bit and makes you feel like, oh yeah, actually I know so little and there's so much for me to find in this world. And it's not even about going far away so much as approaching my own surroundings with that sense of questioning.
Right. I think when we're kids, we have this idea of just traveling the world and meeting people who are as nice as we are and having them expose us to the amazing things that they do when they come and visit. It's like, you know, pen pals in person.
Yeah. And I do think, I mean, there is something about travel. It's an excellent shortcut. Travel is just probably the most efficient shortcut to giving yourself new eyes, to seeing that world. So when you go somewhere new, you start to notice all these little things, like silly things, but you start to say, oh, the trash cans are different, and it's the streetlights work differently. And like that feeling when you kind of are, and it sort of brings you back into present attention, which you lose in your normal surroundings. And so it's just the fastest way to give yourself that sense of focused curiosity, I think. And that's just good for everyone. It expands people's perceptions, you know.
It was so cool, you know, reading this to see that you wrote about the fact that always used to blow my mind when I was young, and that was that South Africa has three capitals.
Yeah. So we filled the book with these like little obscure facts. Why was that the fact that blew your mind?
I don't know. You know, I do know. I know exactly why it was, because I was as a kid, it was still in the days where you could get a shortwave radio, and you know, it's so easy today. You turn on you go on your computer and you can dial up a radio station from wherever you want. But you know, I had a shortwave radio, and I found a radio station in South Africa, and they were giving the temperatures for different parts of the country. And they gave the temperature in Bloemfontein, which is, I think, how you say that. And so the next thing I did is I went to my world atlas and saw there it was, three cities in South Africa that each had the little capital symbol for them. And, you know, down the rabbit hole I went.
Why shouldn't more places have multiple capitals?
I don't
you know, there's no good reason why you can only have one. We wanted the book to have a lot of these little kind of fun facts in them. We wanted to include some stuff that sort of was semi-practical. We talk about, a packing list and things like that. But a lot of it is imparting, like, the philosophy of Atlas Obscura, how you look at the world. But
you're the gateway drug to the adult version.
Kind of, yeah. And we see them as sort of playing together nicely. Like, I think, you know, a savvy 11-year-old can take the sort of adult, you know, the book for adults and page through it and really enjoy it. And I think hopefully in the same way, an adult might be able to take this book and open it up to a page and get that same sense of wonder. But this, I do think this reaches an audience of 6, 7, 8-year-olds who the big book is sort of too much. It's too wordy. It's too much book. And this, because it's illustrated, I think it sort of plays in that space between the real and the fantastical, and it kind of captures some of the magic and wonder of the world from a kid's perspective, you know?
Right, and as you say, there's a lot in this that no kid is realistically going to travel to. They might travel to in their mind, but I wonder if the inspiration that this book provides is to just be adventurous in your travel. You know, it's, you know, you go to New York, you don't just seek out the Statue of Liberty. You look for those weird, you know, whatever the New York equivalent of the Snake Rodeo or Wall Drug is.
Right, right. And I think, like, I don't need to go to Snake Island to love the fact that there's an island with one snake for every 3 feet, and they hang from the trees, and they eat migratory birds, and they eat each other, and it, you know, that just, unsurprisingly, I'm an enormous nerd. I also love reading, you know, personally, fantasy, science fiction novels, and I love that sense of magic. And I think for me, a lot of what Atlas Obscura is about is trying to imbue our own world with that sense of magic and to see things. You know, when you look at bioluminescence in the world, when you look at fireflies or the larval fungus gnats in Watomo Caves in New Zealand, where it looks like this sort of constellation on the ceiling, that is magic. I mean, that is genuinely like ripped from the pages of a fantasy novel because it, you know, our world has that kind of magic, but it we have to engage with it. Like, if we sort of like, yeah, I know. Do you know what I mean? It's like, it's sort of a way to just remind, in a way, it's like, for me, it's a way to remind myself, like, stand still and see the wonder in front of your eyes, you know?
Well, and what better way to do that than to take your kids someplace and say, check this out.
Yeah, and it's funny because, like, my children are tiny, 3.5 and 16 months. But the one thing that has been fun, and when I say travel with them, sometimes that means, like, you know, to the park. The way they engage with their physical surroundings is hyper-present and hyper-tactile and hyper-focused. And God, what I would give to capture, to be able to really get. And so it's, you can get a little bit of it and you can try and put yourself in that place. But I've been trying, you know, to really, that, a child's sense of wonder and amazement in the world is like actually everything that this is for me, and to sort of try and capture, to hold on to that as much as you can as you grow up and become an adult and like have a job and car insurance and whatever.
Well, and I was thinking I was going to ask this question, you know, with a sense of irony, but, you know, often when we engage with the stuff that Atlas Obscura is doing, we're engaging at our desk in a cubicle someplace or on the couch or wherever else it is that we are on our screens. But at the same time, as you're saying this, it's a rare opportunity to be in our cubicle or on our couch or wherever and be amazed by something.
Yeah, and hopefully it like nudges you out the door a little bit. But I'll say this too, you know, sometimes the attention that you pay in your desk to something online. I'm thinking of particularly the story of a place called the Chicken Church in Indonesia. A guy got a vision, you know, sort of one of these like dream visions to build a giant chicken. Well, it was supposed to be dove-shaped, non-denominational prayer house, but everyone calls it the Chicken Church because it looks like a chicken, and they all thought it was a Christian church because he's Christian. But anyway, he couldn't finish it. He ran out of money. It fell into disrepair. It was abandoned for years. In 2015, photos of this place start circulating online. Atlas Obscura, we didn't break the story, but we were sort of an early part of it. And so people start showing up. They go from being 10 people a week coming by and paying their dollar admission to being 100, 200, 1,000. Suddenly, there's money to support this thing. This guy, Daniel, who created it, is able to take that money, pour it back into the place, finish all these murals, set up the cafe and like the butt of the chicken where you can get some fried cassava. And he realized his dream because people were clicking around on their desks, you know, on interesting stuff on the internet, their desks. We live in such a weird interconnected world now. And so much of it is so gnarly. It's like, you know, content farms in Macedonia pumping out like, you know, right-wing memes. But there's another side to it. Sometimes, like, beautiful things happen. The chicken church, like, rises from the ashes, or the clown motel gets 100 bookings. You know, it's this place in Nevada. It's clown-themed. You get it. Anyway, sometimes there are wonderful unintended consequences of our attention. So, anyway, side note.
Well, the wonderful thing is that with this book, one imagines that this isn't going to end anytime soon.
No, I mean, and the newest thing that, as a company, we're doing, so Atlas Obscura, we have this database of 15,000 places all over the world. That's kind of at our core. We do a lot of original editorial reporting, interviewing. We do events. We have 9 event chapters around the country, but we've recently, in the last 3 years, started taking people on trips. So we bring groups of 15 all over the world to Bhutan, to Mexico City, to Antarctica, to, or, well, we haven't gone to Antarctica, we went to the Arctic, sorry. And you know, it's nice to be able to sort of put our money where our mouth is and say, okay, the world is full of wonders, and now we can take you on a journey and contextualize the stuff you're seeing and tell you the stories that make you understand why it's wondrous and why it matters. I've always felt like that's often the problem with travel media, is it tends to be sort of like the nicest new vacation, you know, it's everyone's going to this beach or Iceland, hot new thing. And
we should note this book starts in Iceland.
I know, it has Iceland in it. Iceland is like a truly magical place. But, you know, it gets very repetitive and kind of in these narrow lanes. And, like, it's a big world. And often what makes a place wonderful is not that it's nice. Like, a lot of nice is good. But it's all of the stories and the context and the people and the culture and all of that. And so that's what I, you know, like to focus on.
Dylan Thuris, thank you so much.
Of course, thank you. It's great to talk to you.
Dylan Thuris is the co-founder of Atlas Obscura. We spoke with him at the Greenfield Public Library, where he recently talked about the book for younger readers he co-authored, The Atlas Obscura Explorer's Guide for the World's Most Adventurous Kid. There's a link to Atlas Obscura's list of 16 cool and unusual things to do in Milwaukee at wuwm.com.